Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. Are we ready to start? Before we can start with our meeting, I just want to welcome everybody in here. And I hope you had a very good weekend. And I think we need to start with our today's presentation. But there's an apology from Honorable Mazala, who's off sick. And are there any apologies? There's also an apology from CBE. They discovered when they are here, when they were here, that they've sent us a wrong copy on finances. And I said, what they need to do is to present the correct copy that you have got to the members, and I think we'll have to make copies if we don't have copies. And before we can start with our meeting, CBE, we met last year in October. I don't remember whether it was the 22nd or the 27th of October, and there were four outstanding issues that I think you will cover them when making a presentation. The outstanding issues were, one, recognition of prior learning, two councils that did not sign memorandum of understanding, three, delays of cases and dealing with cases, and the four, aggregation of courses from universities and technicons that are not recognized. Those are the four outstanding issues that I think you'll cover them in your presentation. Can we start? Who's going to make a presentation? Obama Kubani is running late. She will join us. Now briefing by the CBE. The mic is not on, Mama.
No, it's fine. It's fine, man. Contextual issues. The CBE is in its 12th year of existence. And after 12 years, we sit back and we try to reflect on what have we done, what have we achieved. Have we fulfilled the mandate for which we were established? The first 5 years of our existence concentrated mainly on setting up the organization, setting up the organizational structures, and understanding the broad objectives of the mandate and setting up an operating model of some sort. The next 5 years was consumed with largely trying to build up the systems and the processes for delivery, and now we're at a stage where we need to optimize our performance because that process of establishing the organization is complete. In this second year of our strategic plan, we are pleased because we are starting with the year properly. Yes, last year was not a good year for us in the sense that we effectively had 3 quarters in which to do work that was planned over 4 quarters because we had to reapprove our strategic plan, and that process was delayed. For these 5 years, our 3 key aims are as outlined on the slide. The first one is achieving compliance with the CBX. That's the reason why we exist. We can do all the other things, but if we don't ensure compliance with our founding act, then we don't really have a reason to exist. The second aim is advocating transformation in the built environment. The third aim is leading skills development in the built environment. I am refraining from commenting now because these issues are dealt with in detail later on in the presentation. Our strategic goals for the next 5 years are summarized in this slide. It is firstly to drive and support and advise transformation in the built environment, to facilitate integrated development planning, to lead and strengthen stakeholder management, to develop CBE into a thought leader in the built environment, to reposition CBE in the marketplace, strengthen and implement a public protection regime, inform and influence government infrastructure spend and professional practice, to be responsive to public policy priorities, and to strengthen the administration function of the CBE. Those are really our strategic goals, and the project that you will see in the details that we present later will support those strategic goals. While those are our goals, areas where we put focus and priority in striving to achieve these goals is, first of all, achieving alignment of policy planning and reporting processes of professional councils to the government planning cycle. Now, each of the professional councils has been established under its own act and have got their own governance framework. Up to now, these processes have run more or less independently of one another. We have now, with the professional councils, agreed that there is a need to have an alignment of our planning cycle. We have established a team, which Nana is leading, to do the planning alignment project. And they have finished settling the project, and they have agreed on what the scope of the project is. And they should achieve this alignment by the end of the performance period. Strengthening monitoring and regulatory work on delegated public functions and professional councils. Establishment of a structured candidacy program to address bottlenecks in the skills pipeline. Up to now, conventional wisdom for us has been that we need to offer more and more people opportunities to study at tertiary institutions to achieve qualifications in the built environment. While this is a correct approach, on its own, it's not adequate because we have seen, and a study is underway to look at the unemployment of graduates, we have seen that in most instances, our graduates do actually complete their university or University of Technology studies. The problem becomes when they get onto candidacy programs, they either take very long or they don't successfully complete the program and be registered as professionals. So we've got a lot of stranded graduates that have completed the training, but they are not able to register and therefore practice as professionals. So we have budgeted for some money in this year to do a proper diagnostic and design of a candidacy program that we can, in conjunction with the professional council, roll out to try and address this problem of stranded graduates that don't end up as being professionals. Stepping up mechanisms to drive transformation and ensuring adequate representation of women and black people within the built environment. Establishing and strengthening, I'm moving off this because we're going to address it as we move. Establishing and strengthening ties with equivalent bodies within the African continent with specific focus on the SADC region. We have in the previous time reported on the work we were doing with the Zambian Council of Construction. We have the Memorandum of Understanding finalized. We have referred it now back to our executive authority for them to manage the political process that will lead to the signing of this memorandum. Enhancing internal systems and control capabilities to allow organization to deliver on its mandate and strategic goals. This we are doing internally in the organization. We have divided our work into discernible chunks. We have got now a well-defined planning process. We've got a well-defined project execution process. We've got a well-defined risk management process and a well-defined performance reporting, measuring and reporting process. This slide we have included because in reflecting on the 12 years that have gone past, we asked ourselves, what have we really done well and what have we not done well? And this slide presents our current status. Those things that are in the green segment are the things that we have done to completion, that we have done well. Some of them, of course, are things that are ongoing. For example, accreditation is ongoing, registration is ongoing, but we have now developed policies to ensure that there is consistent application of these processes across all the professional councils. On the red side, these are the things that we have not done well. The first one is in the public protection area. Our appeals process, we have said this, and we are repeating today, but today we are going to come and discuss some of the things that we are doing. Our appeals process is not meeting the requirements of the Act. The Act says that we must hear appeals when they are referred to us within 60 days. We are not able to conclude cases within 60 days. On the health and safety side, this is health and safety across the built environment. We did some preliminary research and a report was produced. Our work hasn't gone beyond that. We are going to retake this work to the next layer and try to develop policy around how we should approach health and safety in the built environment. The idea of work, identification of work that is required in the Act has not been completed. This project has been ongoing for the past 7 years, and we still have not concluded it. Now, this is an important matter because many of the things that we do are premised on us having done the identification of work, being able to say what work the different categories of professionals do. The recognition of new professions, we have already drafted a policy on that. There isn't anything that we see here that should be difficult. It's a matter of putting together a policy document. Participation of built environment professions in integrated planning. Part of what I described in terms of aligning our planning processes with the professional councils is meant to address this matter. The professional councils cannot participate in the built environment integrated planning unless their planning processes are aligned to the overall government planning process, and therefore they can provide input when they are required to do so. Some of you might recall, those who approved our business plan, that we have grouped our work into four programs. The first program is the administration program. The second one is the Built Environment Academy. The third one is the Center for Innovation and Integrated Planning. And the fourth one is the public interest. The administration program seeks to improve how we work. And the objectives of the program are as outlined in the slide. It's to improve our image, to establish an effective, efficient organization, to make sure that our people are placed in an environment where they can perform, and to create an organization that is output-orientated, where we focus on what we deliver, not what we consume, and to have sustainability financially over the long term. The second program, which is the Built Environment Academy, its objective overall is to increase access to the BE profession, is to make sure that people who up to now did not have access to training, access to practical training, registration, and so on, do have access, and to meet the demand of BE professional services, particularly across the public sector. The third program, which is Center of Innovation and Integrated Planning, the overall objective of this program is to become what is called a thought leader in the built environment, to be able to provide leadership in terms of new areas of work, in terms of new professions, in terms of new areas of academic research, and so on and so forth. And the last area, but the most important, is, of course, the area of public interest, where we seek to protect the interest by making sure that there is a balance between the interest of the professionals and the interest of the public. The focus area for the 2012-2013 under those programs I've just described are outlined in the following slides. Under Program 1, the overall objective is the implementation of systems, processes, and controls designed to assist the organization to deliver on its strategic mandate. Okay. Thank you. I was startled a little bit. And those are the performance indicators that are associated with that objective. Under Program 2, the objective is to drive and facilitate skills development within the built environment. And those are the key performance indicators that are associated with that. As I've said, the impact of this work is to increase the number of previously disadvantaged persons in the built environment. We are going to embark with budgeted for a feasibility study for a structured candidacy program to address the issue of stranded graduates that do not become professionals. The third program, which is the research and innovation program, its objective is to facilitate participation of built environment professionals to integrated development within the context of national goals. And this we do by doing research internally, but the output of that research are advisory reports that we do submit to the ministry to advise the minister on specific issues governing the built environment. Last year we did work on greenhouse gas mitigation. That was part of the conference that was held in Durban. This year we are continuing with the work on the unemployed graduates, also on our report which was published on the state of the BE environment. All this work supports matters that were discussed at the BE in Durban. It is envisaged that the minister has made a commitment that we will host another BE in Durban before the 30th of November 2012. We are just waiting for him to confirm the date when we will do that, but preparatory work is to start early in this year. Now, the issue of the MOUs, we have the MOU with Zambia is almost complete. When the formal signature thereof, we will see how we can extend it to other SADC countries. The idea again is to make sure that there is mutual recognition of professions, that there is access by professions from different SADC countries, and that where possible we start looking at standards and ensuring that our standards and standard systems can talk to each other. Finally, on program four, our objective is to promote and enforce high standards of professional ethics within the built environment. Now I'm going to spend a little bit of time here, Madam Chair, indulge me a little bit, because this is where our two key problems are. The first one is the problem of the identification of work. Five of the six councils have submitted their identification of work policies. The council that is outstanding is the Engineering Council, NEXA. They have not, they have submitted a policy which our identification of work committee did not accept. Then there was a committee, there was a policy that we developed which NEXA did not accept. So we sit now where we have got two viewpoints that are not reconciled. We have a person who's working, looking at those two policy documents to see if he can produce a compromise document as it were. Now, having said that, when this compromise document is produced, there is no guarantee that it will be acceptable to both parties. We are really thinking about what can we do to break the deadlock. This matter has been referred to conciliation, we had arbitration, we had all the normal dispute resolution processes that one would try to implement in a matter of this case. But we are still where we are, where the professional council that represents more than 50% of the professionals in this country has not come to an agreement with us on the identification of work policy. The second matter in this area that is really of great concern is the matter of appeal. I've had a meeting with the chairperson of the appeals tribunal, the retired Judge De Villiers, where I tried to understand what is holding back. My understanding at this point in time is that many of the appeals are not being finalized because when they are referred to the CBE, the process that had taken place in the professional council most of the time does not supply the information that is required by the tribunal. Either the statements were not taken properly, the record of the meetings was not done properly, where decisions were taken by subcommittees they are not referred to the final councils to be adopted as decisions of the councils and so on. All these things inconvenience the appellants, because when they appeal to us, we have to go back and forth between ourselves and the professional councils to try and straighten those issues. We are going to do two things in order to try and address this situation. The first one is, in this budget, we have budgeted for a diagnostic to formalize all the reasons that are being vented about why we are not able to meet the 60-day deadline. And this will be led by a legal person. Our own internal legal resources are going to develop a code of good practice for holding of this hearing, so that we can give this code of practice to all the professional counsels. While we cannot enforce it, but we can give it to them and say to them, this is the standard that we expect for the hearings to be held. If you hold your hearings up to this standard, when your matters are referred to us, then we can guarantee that we will be able to resolve them in 60 days. So those are the two initiatives that we are embarking on this year to try and address this situation. We are going to raise this situation with our executive authority as well, to let him know that the situation exists, because technically any one of the outstanding matters, if it were to be referred to the High Court today, they will make a finding against us, because we have gone beyond our own legislative mandate. Our process has now become irregular. So this is a key risk matter that affects the CBE, and we are escalating it to this committee. We are escalating it to the executive authority, and we are doing those two things that we said we are going to do to try and alleviate the problem. But we can't just pretend it doesn't exist. Now, these are the details of the programs. I'm not going to take you through the targets quarter by quarter. What I'm going to do is just maybe look at the left-hand side column where we have the overall performance indicator. For program one, is number of stakeholder surveys that we conduct, number of reports that we produce on the implementation of the recommendations that come from the stakeholder survey, number of policy review sessions that we do, and number of planning sessions that we hold. As I said, program one is really internally focused. It focuses on what we do internally in the organization to be able to function properly. Continuing on program one, availability of up-to-date and managed strategy and plan, number of reports on compliance with milestones in the risk management plan, availability of corporate governance framework, number of expenditure reports produced, number of workshops conducted, number of annual financial statements compiled, number of budget estimates submitted, number of asset verification conducted. All these things.
I'm stagnant. We can make all the students.
garden. But with this problem, one of them anyway. We can say, oh, you can make very good, but we have a problem here. Our kids here. And let's go back on the people right there. Look at the people over right there. We are talking about enough. What is it? We are thinking about the two advisors and the court. That would be will be considered on the 30th of January 2013. Two MOO within SADC 13. Enough if you want it at 13. You know, appeals was finalized. These appeals are dragging. And now you are coming to here. I don't want to say excuses, but you are not coming here with. You're not helping us, the committee. You say, with all these outstanding cases that you are failing to complete, what are you saying about this? As I want to say to members, these are the issues, and I will not allow them to continue with us. Our kids, yes. We're just saying these kids are without work. And they are educated, but we are not assisting them. And you make a commitment, SCDE. You say, after the meeting where you brought in council, you will go back, sit down with the council, and deal with this matter. And on the issues of university, the courses from both universities and technical, those here say they are not recognized. You say something will be done about it. And I don't hear it coming clearly. What's happening? I'm sorry to be impatient. It's because I hope for the better. In your conversation, how are you going to assist? Some of the things I raised cases last year. Kids are failing internal examinations over and over. And even gave an example of Borpa, who was writing an examination for the sixth time. You know? I don't know. I need to be assisted or continue, really.
Continue, ma'am.
I said I'm not crazy.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm going to continue. I'm not going to respond in detail to what you said. We can discuss that when we take questions. I'm sure there will be many more questions. But I would just like to say that we are raising this matter because we have ourselves, ma'am, reflected and said, if there were things out there that we are not doing or that we should be doing that can threaten our existence as organization, what are they? And these problems we are raising them because we believe these are the things that if we can do that, then it will justify our existence as an organization. By right, we admit that we have not. It's our 12th year of existence. And I've deliberately said this, that it's our 12th year of existence, that in our 12th year, ma'am, we are embarrassed that in our 12th year, we are still putting in our plans policy development objectives. You know, an organization that is 12 years old, we should be talking about continuous improvement. So we accept that, and we will engage further as we go on. The detail of the programs I had when we had break, I had just gone through program one. Program two, which they are showing program three, is program two, the Skills Academy. Maybe let me comment on the accreditation of programs. All the professional councils have their accreditation processes. They are accrediting them. The issue is that there is a waiting line because they can do a certain number of programs per year because they have to draw people. In some instances, people have to volunteer to come and participate in this. But in terms of the accreditation processes being there, they are there. 2 weeks ago, the landscape architects were here in Cape Town coming to do the University of Cape Town. So these problems are there. In terms of the admission to the profession, there isn't uniform criteria, and this is a matter that also needs to be sorted out. There isn't uniform criteria across the professional council. You find that one council does a written exam, another council does oral exam, another council does case studies, and so on and so forth. So we are asking ourselves, is there a real justification why there are these different methods of accreditation across the councils? And we are engaging the councils on this to try and say, please justify why in your case it has to be an interview, why in your case it has to be a written exam, and so on and so forth. But in-house, what we are doing, we are continuing with our bursary scheme. We are now going to do work on structured candidate programs. And we are also engaging our own executive authority, because the Department of Public Works also employs some of the project managers and so on. So we are getting involved with them to try and assist them in their liaison between themselves and the professional council. On the research side, on the Center for Innovation and Research, really the main event there for the coming year is the BE in Durban. The other performance indicators are leading indicators, are things like availability of the database, increase in use. Those are the things that we need to do internally in order to be able to do our research work properly. But the BE in Durban is going to be the thing that we are going to focus on, and on the conclusion of this MOU with other countries. Public protection, I have spoken about this, and Madam Chair has also commented on this matter. It is the completion of the identification of work. Maybe let me just say that most of our objectives, you will see that they end March 2013. It's just that they are for the performance year. They end March 2013 is the end of our year. So most of these things, we're saying they are annual targets. Therefore, they have to be completed on the 31st of March. But if we wanted the details, then we might look at the quarter by quarter, what is to be achieved quarter by quarter. Now we're going to go on the governance overview, and I will hand over to our chairperson to just talk to the next two slides.
Thank you, Dr. Maripata. Honourable members, the slide on corporate overview is just to indicate that we do at CBE have a good governance in place as per the thing too. That we do ensure that obviously our accounting authority fulfills their role through various committees that we have in the organization. We have the executive committee that's currently in operation that drives our monitoring and internal policies and processes. We do have all other committees as well, such as HRC, transformation, but these other committees are the committees that are assisted in terms of our compliance, in terms of good governance. We do have management committee that plays a significant role in terms of our HR in particular. Audit committee that drives our compliance as it relates to PSNA, the treasury regulations, and all the other issues that include the control and risk management of the organization. We have our finance committee, ethics committee, we have the appeals committee, and also we have the identity of work committee. All of these committees drive the specific focus area within their area of specialty in finance, they guide the financial management processes and procedures that we have within the organization, and they are embedded in there. There are two committees, a committee that our CEO that spoke about briefly, and we will get into details to make sure it's an issue of discussion in terms of how our appeal process works and where the concerns around these appeals and where we stand and going forward, what are the challenges and what we need to do. The idea of work is a committee that really facilitates this idea of process. It's a project that is very key and important to us, but also where we also have the challenges that we currently we have with the ECSA as a professional council, that we are not proceeding despite all the mechanisms that we put, the dispute resolution methods that we put in place. Those are areas, all the policies that we currently have, including all other administrative policies that we have internally, in order to ensure that CBE continues to be compliant to good governance. Thank you. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you. The next few slides, I'm going to ask the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Mokifo Sidibe, to take us through this now financial, and then after that I will proceed.
Thank you, CEO, Chairperson, and honorable members. In terms of our budget as allocated, Chair, we have presented 3 years prior to the year that has been proposed. We've also put in preliminary figures that are still to be audited for this current financial year that we've just executed. And then we've also put in 2 more years so that the committee can have a view of what has been allocated on the years going forward. For the year under review, which is 2012-2013, in terms of our grant allocation, Chairperson, we're sitting at 27 million. You will note that, Chair, the difference between what was allocated in the previous year and what has been allocated in this year is quite minimal. We only have a 400,000 difference, Chair. Moving on to the following years, again, you will see that trend is continuing with just minimum increases on our grant allocation. The levies that we use that substantiate the grant allocation, those are the levies that we receive from the professionals who are registered within the 6 built environment professions, but also, Chair, you would note that money is quite minimal in contrast to our grant allocation. In terms of the interest, Chair, that interest is the interest that we as an organization try to accumulate through funding structures that we have, but of course with the vigorous execution of work, we have interest declining throughout the years, which is minimal increases here and there. Moving on to the next slide here, we are presenting our expenditures as they are driven. You would note that our key expenditure is on personnel costs, and I will talk to that issue as well. On administration expenditure, Chair, this is where our running costs are. We call them fixed costs. Those are the costs that we have to pay in order to ensure that the organization keeps running. Issues of accommodation are in there, and all the other running costs that are associated with running the organization. We've got professional and special services. We've also got capital assets. You will see that on that area, we do not have massive capital investment, and I think the issues are on the allocation been provided. You'll also note, Chair, I think of key interest to the committee is that the program expenditure in relation to the previous year has decreased significantly. And when we look at the budget outline, you would note why, Chair, that decrease is there. Going back to personnel costs, this is the cost of the salary bill as it stands for the CBE. Also, let's say what I think I need to stress as well is that salary bill is for everybody, including the people who are instrumental in the delivery of the organization. Moving on, Chair, I'd like to go to the next slide, which now depicts that full expenditure in line with the programs as outlined by the CEO. And then in program one, which is in, the key focus of the organization, or rather not the key focus, but the key driver that enable an enabler in ensuring that we drive the other programs, we're sitting at 15.8 million. On program two, we've got 1.8 million. On program three, we've got 8.7 million. And in the area of public interest, we've got 2.7 million. I think, Chairperson, what would be noted in the next slide is the reason for this decrease, which we are presenting to the committee. Moving on to the next slide, Chairperson, we thought that for us to further explain our situation, our financial constraints, perhaps it's just to depict the view as presented here. And here you would note that if we take 2008 and 9 as our base year, and we increase that with a percentage of 7% in terms of inflation, you would note that, Chairperson, in terms of the current year under review, we should be sitting at 36.5 million. Now, Chair, in our instance, we find ourselves at 27.4 million, which means we find ourselves 10 million unfunded. Now, this is a situation that we should have been in if everything has been kept stagnant as it is. So in line with that, Chair, you would note that because our fixed costs would be increasing, we then had to allocate a huge portion of our grant to those fixed costs to ensure that we meet the legal commitments, and the rest of the funding that we have is then structured into the other programs. We find this as a serious constraint in terms of our delivery, and I'm sure the Chairperson as well as the CEO will talk to those issues.
Thank you. I'm going to go through the last three slides, and then we will take questions and have discussions. And while I go through the slides, Lucas, I will ask you at the end to comment about the outstanding issues that were raised by the Chairperson. In particular, I would like you to comment about the RPL, the signing of the MOAs, and the accreditation processes. What are the things that we have already done that will stand us in good stead in terms of achieving our objectives for the next year? The first one is that we have now a five-year business plan, and our business planning process, it's sound, it's robust, it works. We can produce these plans on time and so on. We have a good relationship with DPW. We have a good relationship with the incumbent minister. We believe we have his ear. And we have, since he has taken office, we have had a number of engagements with him that were both supportive but also rigorous. We have an experienced and stable workforce. The turnover of staff at CBE it's reasonable. Since I've been there for 7 months, only one employee has left the organization. So it's not as if our employees are fleeing in droves. Now, stakeholder buy-in, maybe it's a bit of wishful thinking. We have a plan that we have identified our key stakeholders. We have identified the key messages that we have for each stakeholder, and we want to engage them on these key messages that we have for them. We have alignment with national priorities in terms of what we want to do. We can understand it in the broader context of what the government is doing. And we have research capacity. I was warned when I use this word capacity, I must always explain that I'm not complaining for lack of capacity. I'm saying we have the capacity. We have experienced researchers. We have people who have conducted research, who can conduct research, and that is something that can, if used properly, will enable us going forward. However, in as much as there are things that are enablers for our performance, there are issues that are also hindrances to our performance. And some of these issues, Madam Chair, explain the frustration that we are having with our slow pace of change and slow pace of responding to some of the problems that we keep on coming back and outlining every time. Now, our first key hindrance to performance is in the corporate governance area, in the area of our council. We feel that for us to perform well as officials, we need to have a council that is united in vision and that can pull us forward. The chairperson of the council will be best placed to comment on this, but this is an area that is also an area that we need to focus on. Financial constraints. Financial constraints, we present a budget and of course the accounting people try to make everything balanced and look like they're balanced. But what the budget doesn't tell us is the opportunity cost of what we are not doing because we don't have the money to do. For example, accreditation of institutions. The key limiting factor is the availability of the accreditors, but it's also the availability of finance because the professional councils do this themselves. Now, it's a vicious cycle. One might argue, yes, but the professional councils do not want to cost their mandates, therefore they don't have the finance to do that. And this is what we've been drumming to the professional councils. But, you know, we come to you when we talk about accreditation, you tell us the limit is the finance. But then we say, let's cost the mandate. Then the mandates are not forthcoming. That's why they're using volunteers. And now they can't use volunteers because now volunteers can't forego their own work to do their work. So it's a vicious cycle that needs to be broken. On our side, the use of legal resources, we have got one retired judge that we use to listen to all our appeal cases. We are now recruiting a panel of legal people to increase the number of people we use. But this, of course, is going to have a cost implication. Preparation of these cases requires time, and sometimes this has to be paid for. This requires financial resources. On the enforcement side, Madam Chair, a lot of the work that we have done up to now is to formulate policies. But to be frank with you, if we were going to enforce and implement these policies adequately, we will need people that can go to the field and interact with these professional councils in the field. We don't have that kind of thing at the moment. And that is the thing that, going forward, when you see us talking about financial constraints, we're talking about this opportunity that we are losing of doing things that we could do if we had much more resources at our disposal. Poorly defined transformation objectives. We're not blaming anybody. We are equally to blame here. We have engaged with the committee previously on the matter of representativity of the profession, i.e. the need to bring previously disadvantaged individuals into the profession. And we all agree that is an imperative need. We have identified that the academic training is one of the levers we can pull to address this. Now we are doing the structured candidacy program is one of the levers we can pull to do this. We do awareness campaign, we do career campaigns, we work with universities. All those levers are the levers we can pull to try and change the demographic representativity of the profession. But it cannot and it does not end there. There ought to be other transformation environment, transformation objectives in the broader BE environment. One, we need to increase the capacity of the public service in terms of having the profession because most of the projects that the government is undertaking, infrastructure projects, expanded public works progress, projects, and so on and so forth, over-rely on consulting firms for professional services. And most of the time, the outcomes are not optimal. labor-intensive technologies are underutilized because the engineers who are designing this program are driven by the interests of their own firms, not by the interests of the public program. So it's an objective that we want to embark on. We also want to embark on expansion of the footprint of professional services in this country. Most of our professional services are being consumed in urban areas. There is no discernible private consumption of professional services in rural areas, particularly amongst the black population. The only time people get into contact with professional services is through government, when the government builds a school or a hospital or a police station and so on and so forth. So transformation includes making sure that these built environment services are accessible, the urban-rural divide is closed, and we just don't pretend that only the urban areas are the consumers of professional services. Another matter that is internal to the organization is the issue of technology. If we are really to be on the cutting edge of research and be a thought leader in our area, we cannot do it on 10-year-old laptops, unfortunately. You would have noticed, Madam Chair, I don't even bring my laptop to these presentations here at the Portfolio Committee because I'm embarrassed to do so. My laptop is probably 12 years old or something like that. So we can't run a cutting-edge research organization where the chief executive is embarrassed to take out his laptop in public. So we need to improve our technology platform. The costing of the mandate, I have talked about this. There is unbelievable stubbornness when it comes to this matter. I would like to hear what else we can do to try and address the matter. Finalization of the MOS, Lucas will talk to that now when he gives you feedback on the matters we discussed last year. This is our last slide, Madam Chair. It's just our assessment of the overall risk scenario next year. On the strategic risks, the key strategic risk we believe is the organizational stability, and this will be largely driven by what happens at Council. We are engaging the executive authority in this matter. We believe that Council need to find a conflict resolution mechanism that does not hinder or spill over to the day-to-day operations of the CBE. On the operational side, the key operational risk that we believe is the technological risk that I've just outlined to you. We need to have a robust technology platform for us to be able to do this. We are running an organization. We don't have project management software. We manage our project on paper. Now, this is 2012. An organization that runs without project management software in this day and age, it's questionable to what extent we can be efficient. So those are small things that, of course, we can hide. I'm saying these things so that when I say, you know, we've got a financial constraint, people mustn't think that it's just complaining about money. This thing at a practical level can really, really compromise the quality of the work that we produce. I have talked about the legal risk in the delay of the cases, and also the project implementation risk. We have to formalize our project management platform. We have to get a proper project management platform. We can't do this paper thing. This paper thing is completely outdated. It's not going to take us anywhere. So this is our risk overview for the year. I would ask Lucas to just comment on those outstanding issues and give feedback on them, and then, ma'am, we will take questions.
Thanks, Madam Chair, Madam Member of the Commission. Let us begin with the issue of MOA. The last time when we presented here, we had thought that three that had committed, one is three that had signed, one is committed. Now four have signed, two have not signed. Let me name the one that have not signed. The Engineering Council of Africa has not signed. The Architectural Profession has not signed. Now, in our engagement last week with the Engineering Council, we got a commitment that on the 4th of May, they will sign. We haven't gotten a commitment from the architect. So there is significant progress on the MOA. So we will have 5 signs. The architects, we haven't gotten any commitment. We are expecting that in terms of doing that. Let me move to the RPL. The RPL is a demand-driven process. It's a recognition of finality. When I say it's demand-driven, it depends on the number of applications that the council receives for recognition of finality. We have a political work that we have developed that we are implementing with the council. So there is progress in terms of implementing the RPL. What is the issue, though, is that there are some councils who believe that their professions are so technically complex that it is impossible to recognize learning that comes outside of the academic environment. We are engaging with those councils, one of which is the engineering council. They believe that engineering is so technically complex that it is impossible to recognize that it comes out of the format. We are engaging with the respective partners. Let me come to the accreditation. It's quite a challenge that the CEO has mentioned regarding the accreditation. There is good progress that comes from making it. For instance, I can say that the engineering, within the engineering profession, all the programs within the tertiary institution have been accepted. Same applies to the paper. I'm going to come back to this up again, and then property regulators as well. We have developed a timetable to force a professional council to commit to accrediting programs that have been set. Progress is good in this aspect. For instance, last year when we recorded, project managers had not accredited some of their courses. They have committed to accredit all their courses between June 2012 and September 2012. So there is movement in terms of participation. Where we experience the problem, Madam Chair, is with the computer learning profession. There are courses that are being run in tertiary institutions that are not accredited. Now, what is the implication of this? Maybe we can talk about the presentation, but the implication of this is that you have students that are enrolled in programs within tertiary institutions that are carrying the risk of not being able to be recognized as professionals when they come out of those programs, before those programs are not accepted. So we are engaging with the council on this matter, specifically the computer learning profession. There is another risk, Madam Chair, within the architectural profession, and this is a criminal matter. It relates to the issue of fly-by-night institutions that are offering architectural programs that are neither recognized by the PhD, the professional counselors and so forth. And how to take their students and their children to these institutions. And these institutions are illegal in nature. So that is a criminal matter that the council, the architectural council, is currently engaging on in terms of trying to address the matter. Because we've got a student that comes out of the hospital institution because they thought this thing is illegal, they have a certificate that nobody can ever report. And it's a big problem for the profession, and that is a really good problem. So that is the progress we're saying. So there is good progress on accreditation. We are happy with what we're saying and the commitment we put to this in the council. And the MOA is things that we have made, we've got some commitment, especially from the biggest council, which is the general council. They have accreditation, and they will consider that on Friday next year. So we are only left now with the state. Which I think we should continue to engage with, because there are issues around the stability of the criminal matching process. So we will continue to engage with the Justice Department. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Next question, please.
The chairperson will just conclude. Yeah.
Thank you, and thank you, Honorable Chair. You will recognize, Honorable Members, that our plan, current DSB, has presented to you. We do have some opportunities that we recognize as well that need to be fulfilled. We aim to continue to put a lot of effort on the areas that we have not achieved. Just to mention a few in particular, the area of our appeal, and I would like to possibly in our discussion to also talk about that. There's two things that we can do in the appeal. Obviously change the regulation that it actually goes beyond the 60 days of the election, and we've engaged our executive Electric Authority on that, and you are receptive of the idea. However, we're not sure that in the 60 days, if we do get the 60 days learning, whether the professional council would actually go through the process that would enable us that in 60 days we achieve that. So, and hence, we are going through with the professional council regarding those appeals to actually do best practices with them. The other area is the ideal work. The ideal work is a really important project for us at CBE. We need to continue to achieve that. There's been vast progress to actually make an announcement on that. But for all the other professional councils, the five other professional councils, we've moved quite mountains ahead in terms of where we are. However, we do recognize that ESA is one of our biggest professional councils. That's the one that we currently have a statement on, and we need to resolve that issue. We have achieved a number of other areas. You will recall that in our Act letter, we've got the last goal that we have, that we need to ensure to standardize processes within the professional council. We've written 11 regulations in regards to what we have that we need to do. One of them, and among some of them, Madam Chair, you will, some of the areas we've mentioned, registration, accreditation, all of those. We've written how we should actually standardize registration across all the professional councils. That regulation has been written, and now the process is we need to take it one step further, and it was done in the 2011-2012 financial year. The current process that we need to take now is now we need to take all of those regulations that we've recognized, that we've standardized, now to actually take it to the next level. But you'll remember that also the deficiency within our head that, yes, we do not necessarily have the, well, professional councils are autonomous in their own entities. But we need to push those areas, but we have actually, the policies have been done, they have been approved by council. We just need to go into the area of, okay, how do we implement. Which leads me to the second comment. The issue of finance for CBE is a serious concern for us as council, but also honorable president and honorable members. That when we get to a point where our budget, when 90% of our budget is fixed cost, it's things that we just have to pay for. It's people, it's building, it's 90%, and we only have 10% for programs. It starts to become a challenge. So these are the programs that we need to do. These are the other things that we need to do other than paying the building, other than paying people, other than paying things that we need to do to keep the office open. It becomes a challenge to say 10% of the 27, and it continues to go down. So in the near future, we'll end up with just fixed costs, nothing else, very little to do. I think that's one of the huge concerns that we have in terms of really driving that. So I think the key on the concern of finance is really on that issue. But last as well is the issue of our council. I think in terms of our council, I think the CEO mentioned briefly that, you know, we need to be able to have better ways of managing conflict. We've got 20, the Act allows us to have 20 members in terms of council, 12 of which are from the professional council, the 8 are from government and other members of the public. Now, when you actually get to a point where the self-regulating process or the intention is that, you know, professional councils need to self-regulate and they're in the majority, sometimes there's an area where there's self-interest from the professional council, where we don't necessarily speak in one voice from a CBE, but people are pushing programs or interests based on their professional councils, you know. And I think for me, and it becomes evident, I think, I know, Madam Chair, that Lucas was saying that huge progress on an MOA in terms of signing. But this MOA has been there since 2009. We are in 2012, we haven't signed. In an ideal world, those members are members of our council. And in an ideal world, if it works well and we have the same vision, we should be signing instantly because they understand a CBE that we have. But you have members in the council that we are pushing our own interests within our professional council, and we do not have mandates or we do not have authority over those professional councils. So the area in terms of conflict is really in terms of we really need to get to a point where we see the same light and we share the same vision, but people get there and also protect their own professional councils within CBE, also creating a challenge for us as CBE as a council moving forward, because those members are mandated by their professional councils who are protecting their own interests, sometimes using the CBE platform. So, Honourable Chair, that's my closing comment based on that. And yes, I would like to believe that there is there's a good intention that we signed the MOA, but I start to wonder when from 2009 we had a good intention, when in 2012, how good is the intention? So if you could have signed, I mean, yes, we're waiting for a meeting. How many other meetings have we waited for you to sign those MOAs? And if we said, and we spoke about this thing also in council, and council didn't even have the same view about the MOA. So I think really I'm starting to question the idea that is it just tactics? Are we using tactics? And we're saying good things, we really don't want to say no, because it's not a candid answer to say, but are we using tactics? I mean, we've been waiting and we've gone on, we've spoken about this, we've done all possible things, and I think at this point it is starting to become quite a frustration. Thank you, Alderman.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know if I have
thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to inform the members here from the CBE that I'm a new member of this committee, and this is my first introduction to what you're doing. So, in on one hand, I may be disadvantaged because I know that I am learning, and I don't really know what you're doing. But on the other hand, coming in fresh, you see things with a completely fresh look, and you're not actually burdened by previous presentations and previous problems. So that might also be an advantage. So out of that background, I actually want to say that my observation is that this CBE exists kind of for its own sake, and reflected in your budget, because the biggest portion of the budget is spent on fixed costs at the chairperson of the board business. So then I like to stand out in the presentation on office and all the equipment that you need and the staff. And there's very little spent on programs we actually deliver or we actually have an output. So I started to think, what are we actually doing? What's the reason for your existence? Is it just for your own sake, because of your offices and so on? But then, so I'd like to have comment on that. That's my kind of observation, is like a comment on that. That's the first one. The second observation that, if I can answer that, is that my own question is that I get the impression you exist to actually try and regulate or standardize all the various professional councils. And my question is, why do you want to do that? Why don't you leave the professional councils? They are running their own affairs. This is the chairman of the board, that they're looking after their own interests, but that's exactly, you know, that's exactly right. I'm a member, or I was a member of a professional body. I'm a qualified clinical psychologist in my previous life, which was a politician. And as such, I understand exactly where the professional councils are coming from. You do your academic training, and then you have to have an examination or an approval by the professional body, and the register of that professional body to make sure that you adhere to certain standards in your profession. But it's not just for the profession, it's also to protect the public. So that the public knows that you, this person, whether you're a doctor, or you're an architect, or an engineer, or you're a psychologist, if you're registered with a professional body, that you sign up to maintain certain minimum standards. That's what the professional councils are doing. So we don't want to have people posing as engineers, and they quit our buildings, and then the buildings collapse after a year or during the construction period. So you have to maintain standards to protect the integrity of the council. That's what the councils are there for a very good reason. And I don't see the necessity of trying to control the councils. They are independent, and they are there to look after their own interests and maintain certain standards for the interest in the interest of the public. Madam Chair, I've got a lot of other more detailed questions, but I think maybe this is the kind of, you know, getting to the body of, to the heart of the matter, and I'll leave it there.
The opportunity for other members to ask other questions. Thank you. Thank you. First of all, I think in my own way, I need to identify the challenges that I think in the city. We're talking about students. We have used a long time ago, but still stranded and unregistered. We are talking about the parents who spend a lot of money in some cases they get clever or whatever they have in order for them to go to the university. And then at the end of the day, they are not registered because they are off the borderline. My main question is, what is CBE doing to overcome the challenges? I would accept them, again, besides this, because this is the first time CBE to come to explain the challenges, because really they are challenges.
Why we have
some of the countries can't really find those. And the other thing is with regard to the establishment of the community character program for I just also want to be unpacked so that we can understand exactly what person do they want to push. Because I believe that for a person to be a doctor or to be an architect, that person needs to be a trainee. Must be trained and so there must be some program that like that person could need to be actually capacitated or skilled so that when the person comes to be given an application, we are sure that this person can actually do the right job. Or actually can actually do the work that is not going to put the head to the community, but my community has been taken. Because we were seeing in many cases where patients were dead. And when rain comes, those communities are washed away. So I think maybe we need also to find out that in terms of the cancer, do they actually sit down and actually find out why the cancer are creating those cancers? What is the problem? So when I see this, I see also many things that are actually the same, but I don't actually get the root cause, or how are they addressing the root cause of this kind of a problem. And also another issue that I also want to point out is with regard to IGO, where it is indicated that IGO has been there for 7 years, but still not yet completed. I think that maybe I need to find out why are they not putting a lot of effort on it because of the finance or what's the problem that's causing this suffering and still not in computer. Those are some of the things that I want to find out from the CCD. And I'm also a new member in the community.
Thank you. Honorable
Manuel.
Thank you, let me start to appreciate the presentation. Although there are few questions, I just want to share with the issue of the delay, especially by experts, because most of the people, when they're delayed, out of use, after that, they want to go. Then, you have mentioned the feeling of the maintenance cost, but when looking at the presentation, you know when you highlight to us how many costs are going to pay in information. Yes. Let me say the satisfaction. How many are supposed to be, how many costs are vacant, out of those vacant costs, how many vacant funds are cost, and also how many costs are you going to pay in this financial. Yes, they will be able to fill all the vacant funding pools. Then the other one, we want to talk about the type of United institutions, which impact negatively on our, especially on the previous disadvantaged community. Then, since they have been able to identify those institutions, what is it that you've done? Do you have to access or to prevent the people registration of learners in those illegal institutions, because at the end of the day, it impacts negatively on those who are children, really, that they haven't been struggling to pay for funding at the end of the day, they don't pay any cost out of what they were invested in their children. Then the other answer, I think the issue of the students, that the students about that they need to finance, at least the new students that they're going to finance is going to be short-term education, or maybe they started in the previous financial year. The last one change, you know, when we're talking about this thing now, we're talking about that they didn't pay by the plan for the last change financial year. This could be good in that, this could be good in that. And it's worried me because I think that is where you're supposed to come together as well as people that they find the outcome of things. On the financial, that's to simplify the CFO. And especially on the spending plan, the spending trend. From 2011 to
and also vis-à-vis the revenue, so that when you're selling and you're positioned to go, you've got financial constraints, we have to understand whether are you able to spend what is being allocated to you, because you can't talk about some financial constraints when on the other side, they're paying to spend here, the little that is being allocated to you. Based on the input also that has been said by the chairperson of the DE, that 90% of the budget is spent on the street, why 10% is allocated for program? Maybe it's 10% so that when the rate is from where you come, where are you going to say that it is allocated to you, in the amount that, extra amount that you need for you to be able to execute your money.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think a lot of it has been said by prior members, honorable members. Maybe we can also get to put a stamp on what has been said. You know, we've been watching TVs about around this way. I also want to put my stamp on that to say that what is CBE doing? You're not making any noise. You're just quiet in your corner. There is nothing that you are doing. We're watching all these programs on TV of people that are working on other people. Can you please run with speed? Because this is eating our parents. This is eating our children. And the second one, that is really worrying. It's 12 years that CBE is on the CBE established. At least 12 years. There is no software. I am from the old studies, Chimakati Malang 1234. Today, it's technology. Such a big establishment, not having software, is very mature. Where are you thinking? On paper. So that's really a very worrying factor. The other one, Chairperson, I think the members have really covered me, because I'm expecting by long term that the engineering council will have been signed and I will not go on to. We need to have time constraints to say that by the end of June, all councils will have been signed. I will not get into other. It is a sound like politics if we are saying some have to stand on their own. But we know what has been happening. Those who want to stand on their own is because they want to be only them. And that's our biggest problem in this South Africa. And thank you, Chair.
Their role as CBE is to regulate the six councils and not to interfere in the council. Regulating which says to me, you raised the last year. I mean, we need to be open and honest. I don't like talking about this thing. But I still say, how can a student sit for 6 years writing the same examination and failing the same examination? There's a problem there. That's what we need to know. There's no way that a student can complete at a university and want to be and recognize professional engineer, but want to go and sit and write six pattern examinations. And this very student is excellent at
results at the university were excellent. But when it comes to the internal examination, that very soon is not performing. It's a problem. And last year, we said we don't want to talk about the thing, but it was about black and white. And of course, it's not good. We don't want to talk about it. One of those days of talking about black and white, but we are talking about students here who are not succeeding. And your role is to be intervening. We need to identify, we need to come up openly to us as committee to say the problem lies here. Why are these kids not making it in that internal examination? That's where the problem is. It says there was equal power. We can't regulate them. Meanwhile, they are going to regulate. If one looks at all page 21 of their strategic plan, they are six objectives and about 9 objectives. Are you hands on? Are you going to make it on the objectives that they are saying on page 21? That's the problem. They are not going there for the answer, but to regulate. All of us here in Parliament, that's the part of Parliament, we are sort of regulated. We don't do as we need. We must come to work. We don't just get home and not come to work. That's how I understand it. We don't do as we like. We are controlled, not controlled in the true sense of people. But somebody says we must come to work, somebody must know we are whereabouts, if we get in there somewhere. That is about the health issues here and all that. Those are their responsibilities. All about the areas and from there we are ready to respond.
Thank you for giving me another opportunity. I think on some issues we all agree, and I just want to state here, for example, the stranded graduates said that we did. It's an issue of grave concern. People have what they thought, they believe that qualified at a certain institution to become trained engineer, to use that example, but they find that they cannot register. It's a big concern. But the reason is why. Is it because the council, for some strange reason, accept some people and reject others while they may be at the same standard? Or is it because that some people are not entered or accepted into the profession because maybe they're trained at substandard institutions? We've heard about the illegal institutions, the fly-by night. Somebody sets up a college overnight and they say, bring your children here, we'll train them to become engineers one day. Parents go there in good faith and they sacrifice a lot to pay the required fees, hoping that their children will become qualified people. But this institution is simply not accredited or doesn't have the credentials and it doesn't provide standards, the training up to a certain standard, and therefore the professional, whether it's an architect or engineer, simply say, well, sorry, we can't accept your qualification because it doesn't meet our minimum requirements. Or we don't want to say people are registered with our body, will build a bridge or a high-rise building, and the building will crumble and the storm or the bridge will flow away with the first time the river comes up. We don't want that kind of thing. So we have to ask where is the problem. And it may not be the council, it may be with a training institution that are illegal or such provide such that are training and exploit parents who say in good faith or what they believe is training for the children. It's not to make that clear.
This is a man's work in this area. Especially in near hospital, it's a men's world. And let me please bear with me. I want people to understand better. It's a men's world. It was a white men's world because we are told, I've never been there, that people who are there, they are now of age, they should go for pension. But they don't want to move. They don't want to open up to allow young, energetic, to allow women to come in. That's what they are saying. And we take what we are reported to say that's the problem, the main problem. They don't want to go on pension. For what reason? We don't know. They are there, stagnant. The movement is slow. LSC mere energetically, but they don't want to move. They don't want to create a space. That's what they are saying. And that's the problem that we must deal with. We're not saying we must chase away people.
but we must prepare for the future. We must have new energetic people. As I'm sitting here, I feel that I'm getting there, and I must move to allow young ones to come in. CBE.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I'd like to probably just touch on what you've mentioned and maybe answer also Honorable Breyer on the comments, specifically on the initial comments of saying we're supposed to regulate but not necessarily interfere in terms of the professional councils. And I think the idea as well with CBE's existence is that we need to balance commercial as well as public interest. You know, there is that we need to have that balance, and particularly in areas where there's been a problem in terms of access to the professional councils. You cannot just leave it and say we are not doing anything. So the idea is really to assist. I mean, we know instances where people, it takes 17 years for people to be registered for professional councils, and we cannot really say there is no problem. So that's why I'm saying the idea of just not regulating, and we need to leave the professional councils as they are without necessarily interfering in that sense. We need to think about where we are. We've had incidences with ESCOM where we didn't have enough engineers. We do not want those incidences to repeat themselves, and therefore, what do we need to do? I think that's the idea of actually working with professional councils, and being able to really bring them into the fold of this regulation. And then, Honorable Chairperson, you mentioned, and specifically, you referred us to the mandate of CBE where we have those 9 objectives. You will recall that you mentioned as well that there's a deficiency in our Act. With all those 9 regulations, you will see that the VEP, and when we talk about that we have equal powers, the VEP is promote, facilitate, promote. It's only in the last one that says CBE needs to ensure and inform application of norms. And this is where I'm saying sometimes that the Act does not always, the Act as it currently as it stands, it does not necessarily give us teeth to actually go enforce certain things. It's only in the last one that says, objective number 9, ensure uniform application of norms and guidelines set by the professional council through the built environment. And this is where we've had to write all the 11 regulations so that we can start to regulate those professional councils. We've written them, we've approved them as council. I know there's a few that are standing with the minister. I think there's 2, the SGB and the other one, but we've written them. Then the next point, and this was in the last financial year, 2011-2012, now we need to get to a point of how do we enforce those regulations into the professional councils. Now, these are the things we need to do. Here's the transparency in terms of registration. Here's the transparency in terms of accreditation, which we currently don't have jurisdiction on because they have their own authority. They don't even report to us. They report directly to Public Works. They actually, to some extent, I mean, there's incidences where they actually tell us that we don't owe you answers. We do not report to you. We don't owe you answers. We even, to some extent, sometimes struggle to get in some compliance statistics. You would ask, what's your racial split in this and that? No, we don't have to give it to you. So we don't have those that jurisdiction, but where we do, we're putting together in order to actually regulate. So in terms of the regulation, we do have some deficiencies. We're working with what we have, and I think this is where the discussion, I know honorable members have spoken about it a number of times, the issue of the bill also comes in and say, what do we do? What do we currently do, and how do we really go through this mammoth task in terms of being able to regulate effectively? Because right now we are doing what we have within the constraints, which is not really much. The current Act as it stands does not really give us that much authority. They still remain the autonomous organization that reports directly to Public Works. We facilitate, we promote. All these things as promote, facilitate, and we have no authority. We can't force them. And they keep on pointing us back to the Act that says nothing tells us that we should actually be reporting and giving you all of these things.
Thank you. I am going to continue with the questions, but not with the same passion that my chairman has. Okay. CBE exists for its own sake. My chairman explained that if one looks at the Act, really a lot of matters are advocacy with to promote things and so on and so forth. There are only 2 or 3 matters that where we have to ensure things, where it means that we can enforce things. I agree with you, Madam Chair, that maybe this could partly be because of the way the Act is. it might have to be addressed by the legislative changes. Why do you want to regulate affairs of the professional cartels? My chairman has also touched on that. This is a question beyond ourselves. We are formed by an act of parliament, and our role primarily as officials, I know I'm going to sound like a bureaucrat, is to implement the act as it stands for now. But I agree with my chairperson that, of course, at a conceptual level, yes, we can make an argument that we need to look at the affairs of the professional council. For example, we need to ask about transformation in the professional council. We need to track the progress in the professional council. These matters of closing the urban and rural divide are not going to address themselves. We did a study at CBE where we used a popular management model, the Porter's Five Forces model, to analyze the activities of these professional councils. And our findings support this view, that in the main, changes in the professional space are dictated largely by economic matters. They are not dictated by the desire to achieve social or human resources development outcomes. So unless there is involvement by ourselves and by the government and so on and so forth, there might not be the necessary transformation that we require. So, yes, the short of it is we unfortunately are implementing the act as it stands, but I also personally believe at a conceptual level that we can make a case that we need to be involved to ensure that there is transformation in the built environment sector. What is the CBE doing to overcome the challenges of stranded students? We have raised this issue today, and we have talked about our intention to do the study on the structured candidacy program. What I'm going to say about the candidacy program also will address the question of why are students failing six times, and what happens about the unemployment students. Now, for there to be success for a graduate to become a professional, there are normally three parties that are involved. There is the graduate herself or himself. There is what is called a mentor, who would be a professional who had qualified before, who mentors this graduate while the graduate is a candidate. Then there is the employer of the graduate, because the graduate has to have a workplace, somewhere where he can work. And lastly, there's the professional council, or let's call them the regulators, ourselves and the professional council. So we have those four parties that are involved for somebody to become a professional. Now, in most instances, the student has done his bit, has got his degree or his diploma and so on. So he's ready. Then, if he's fortunate, he gets employed, but he doesn't get a committed mentor. So he doesn't get the practical experience that he requires. So when he goes to write the exam, he fails. Right? In some instances, the person is not even employed. So if he's not even employed, he's a non-starter. He can't even do anything that will get him to register as a professional. Now, to address this thing, we have to get all these four parties to pull together. We can't have these four parties pulling in different directions. And what we are trying to do in our own way, our philosophy is, and I've been preaching this to our people, I said, let's influence where we can influence. I'll give you an example. I received a letter from a certain Mr. George Bybee, who is in the Free State. And he said that he's employed by the Department of Public Works. And he has written the exam for the project managers, I think, three times. And he was failed because he can't speak English, he speaks Afrikaans. Okay. He sent me this letter. Now, what can I do? The first thing is to obviously investigate the facts of the matter. So I approached the concerned counsel and I said, is it true? Do you know this gentleman? Has he faith? And the counsel disclosed to me and they said, yes, we know the gentleman. He has faith. He has not failed because the exam was in English. We gave him the option of an exam in Afrikaans. He failed because he didn't do the work that is required for qualification. Here is his portfolio of evidence. Now, we could have left it there and said they've explained. But no, there's something wrong. Because this man works for the Department of Public Works. And this is the same department that I effectively work for. So there is something that we can do. So we now wrote to the Department of Public Works, to the DDG who's responsible for projects, and we said, look, we want to see you because we want to understand what programs do you have in place for these people you have employed as candidates that will enable them to pass their exam. So in our little way, we are bringing these four participants together. We want to have transparency in terms of the requirements for registration, but we also want to make sure where we have access to the employers that the employers do have structured programs that the employees are undertaking, and they do have mentors that are appointed to look after them, and they do monitor the performance of these mentors so that the student at the end can then register as a professional. And I have no doubt in my mind that if we were to call all these students, each one will have a story that relates to one of these four participants that have failed him or her. And we can, as part of our advocacy role, we can bring these parties, four parties together and make sure that they are aligned. That's what I think we can do. And unfortunately, this is not to say we'll bat somebody over the head with a hammer, but we can make a meaningful contribution by making sure that these things are explicit, people are committed, and we monitor how they deliver on this objective. Why don't we have a demographic pie? The reason was slightly, when we prepared for this presentation, Honorable Member, we were biased towards the planning aspect. That's why we didn't put a lot of performance. You see, there isn't any performance data that we put in. We were much more biased towards just including the things that is in the business plans. And I am sure when we come back in future to come and present our performance information, we will keep on reporting on this demographic profile. We need to sit and come up with a plan. And I agree, particularly on those matters where we are bashing our head against the wall. You know, the matter of the appeals, the matter of the identification of work process, if this committee can assist and make input in any way, that would be most welcome to us if it will lead to us resolving this matter speedily. Unregistered institution, this problem is becoming worse and worse. Unfortunately, again, we can play a role, but the other role needs to be played by the relevant department, which is the Department of Higher Education. As the honorable members were speaking, I was thinking that I'm sure when we do our career work with the schools and so on and so forth, we should start indicating to them, this institution have got programs that we have accredited. So if you want to study, we recommend you study in this institution. We haven't really been doing that in the past, and we will include that in our work when we do career guidance at schools to try and highlight institutions that have got programs that we know that they have been accredited, so that we can guide our students to the relevant institutions. But the Department of Higher Education, in most instances, will have the direct regulatory oversight over that. We will play our role in terms of disseminating the information and raising the awareness. What is a structured candidacy program? I've addressed that when I talked about the four roles that need to be aligned. And that also talks to why graduates are not being registered. On the registration of graduates, there is just one more thing that I would like to mention. We do engage with the professional council. For example, last week, I wrote to the quantity surveyor professional because we realized that they've got only two categories of registration. You are either a professional or a candidate, whereas the other councils have got professional technologists, technicians, and so on and so forth. So we wrote to them and say, you know, please explain to us why your categories of registration are different from others. Because from an access point of view, it means if you've got only two categories, you can only enter through one access. Whereas if you've got more than one category, there are a number of options for entry into that professional. So, yes, we engage with them on an ongoing basis, but this is not going to shift the world. You know, this is it's a small step that might change a little bit in a specific profession, but it's not going to change the world. Now, I want to comment on the idea of work. Why it has taken 7 years and why we can't resolve it. Madam Chair, it has got to do with the structure of the council. Because if there is a committee of council that cannot reach agreement on a matter and they refer it to the main council, they will find that in the main council, 12 out of the 20 people who sit there come from the professional council. So if it was an agreement between two professional councils, it just gets escalated to the council. It's not regulated. If the officials take a view that is unpopular with one of the councils and they formalize this view in a policy document or any other document and they submit it to council, if this view is against the professional council, they are in the majority in the council. They will just shoot it down. So a matter like the idea of work can go in circles forever because the committee will work on the matter, get a dispute, refer it to council, then the council is in dispute, refers it to the committee again, and this thing just keeps on going and going and going and going, and there's no breakout out of it. It relates to the structure of the council and the ability of the council to pass unpopular measures that affects one of the professional councils. Filling of the management post. We have, where are those numbers? We have, my head of HR, yes, lost the numbers. We have a staff complement of 32. 27 of those posts are funded. 5 are not funded. And currently, in the organization, we've got 2 vacancies that are being filled. We are filling the vacancy of a legal officer, which has been advertised. We will fill it soon. And, of course, there is the position of the chief executive officer that is also being filled. Flyby Night Institutions, I've given my comment on that. Bursary students, are they new students? Not all of them. This year we have taken 7 students. How we determine how many students we take, we look at the money that is available. We go to our EduRest committee of council. We make a proposal of the number of students that we should take and the disciplines that we should take, and then they approve, and then we take those students. We still have got Lucas, how many students in the pipeline?
The one that we have now is 45.
We've got 45 students in the pipeline. So if some will leave the pipeline, we will then replenish those. The Indaba, we've been talking about it. Yes, the changes in our ministers, in our executive authority, I think delayed us getting a firm commitment. But now from the current minister, we have a firm commitment that we will have it in this year before the end of November. Are we spending what is being allocated to us? CFO, I think you can give the details, but the broad answer is yes. Maybe you should come with the exact percentages what we spent last year and so on.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, what I'll commit to is actually giving the committee a report
detailing out the expenditure trends for the years that I had depicted here. Currently, I'm a bit uncomfortable on stating the percentages when I don't have firm figures on my graphs here. So I will be emailing that in the next 2 days or so. That report will be coming through.
Thank you. Technology, there is no software. I'm thankful that my desperation has been recorded, but of course it's also upon ourselves to find means to have solutions to fix this. I am raising it. We are working on it where we can. We had a grant from the Department of Public Works last year for $300,000. For us to replenish desktops, and we have spent that money. We have, so some of our employees have got new desktops. So we will keep on working on that going forward. I hope it was a suggestion that by June all MOUs must have been signed, but I am taking it as an instruction. So I will go back and inform the two councils that haven't signed that. And the portfolio committee has said that by June, all MOAs must be signed. Otherwise, ma'am, I'll bring them here next time to explain. The committee.
They were here last year. We had a discussion with the Chief Counsel.
Yes.
And they agreed that they will sign the memorandum of understanding. And we are just surprised.
Yes, yes.
Why are they not signing?
We will repeat it. We don't have power over the councils. I agree, Madam Chair, and your interpretation that maybe the deficiency is in the act. I agree with that too. What can we do about it? Not as CBE, but our executive authority is also aware of this problem, but it's a matter that I'm sure you can take up with them about what the status is at the moment. It's a man's world. Yeah. It is a man's world. Ma'am, I agree. We did our state of the BE study. Two trends emerged that you have sort of alluded to. The first trend was consolidation. In our study, we saw that many of the small firms are being gobbled up by the bigger firms. You tend to get a smaller number of firms doing a bigger and bigger proportion of the work in the built environment. That is the first trend that we observed in this study. The second trend is, as you said, yes, the age profile of our professionals is not favorable. It's over 50. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I know it is over 50 because we have looked at it before. The average age of a professional in this country is over 50, and our population is becoming younger and younger. So, spot the mistake. We need to do something to bring more and more younger people into the profession. Now, I don't have any evidence that it is the old men that are closing the gates. I mean, it might well be, but whatever it is, as a country, we need to realize that if we don't do anything in the next 10 years, the average age goes over 60. And then what do we do? It will start reflecting in the performance of our projects, infrastructure projects, maintenance projects, and so on and so forth. So yes, what you have said is in line with what research shows, that the average age of professionals is getting bigger. There are less younger people in the profession, and also there is consolidation. Smaller number of companies are doing more and more work proportionally. Honorable Chair and the members of the committee, I've tried to answer the questions that I've jotted down. If I have left a question that has been asked, please ask it. We will try to respond to it.
Honorable Ngwane, Honorable November, Honorable Dreyer. Daddy, you wanted to respond?
to draw the attention of the committee on the significance of the MOA, that two of the key deliverables of the MOA relate to registration. The other is mentoring that the CEO was mentioning. So if you sort out those two key things, you are able then to deal with the problems that we're having with registration. Because what you do effectively is to get the councils to commit to sorting out these problems. So if they sign an MOA, it means they're committing to sort out their problems. That's why I'm saying the significance of the MOA is so big that the two key bottlenecks in the way that they run their business is in fact one of the in fact included in the deliverables of the MOA. So it's very important that they sign these MOAs for us to be able to sort out some of the problems that the committee has been raising.
That's why we are saying it must be done by June. By June it must be done. And we'll communicate with the Department of Public Works that they make a follow-up that those two councils sign their MOUs. Honourable members, we have got women pilots who carry the lives of passengers in their hands as women. Why can't women be allowed in this council? What's special about this council if women can be pilots? Why are these bottlenecks? We need to open up these bottlenecks. By the end of June, they must have signed. And can we agree, we'll engage with the department after this meeting, that the endeavor be brought forth. Forward. November is too far. There are serious issues in this professional councils, of which we must open up for young guys, young ladies to come in. And that's why I'm saying it's a men's world. It's because even if I don't know Bokre, I don't know him. Only about two people, three people wrote to me to say they are continuously failing. And my perception is that it's because they are women. They are not allowed to get into that profession. You know, there's an unknown fear from these men. They are scared to bring in women. That's how I took it. And we need to open up the gates. By June, it must be said. Follow up. Mama Mingwan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm partly covered by what the last answer. But my other, about the assistance of the underdeveloped tribes. it's sort of a suggestion about the introduction of the built environment at an early stage. We mustn't wait until these people go to universities before they get the guidance as to which profession they should take. I mean, I think the CA should have a program to go to school, to high school, to assist the students to choose the engineering as part of their thanks.
No, Chairperson, it seems like our minds are working at the same time. It was about the career guidance in schools. And it would be very much interesting to know up to how far does they go down. If, for instance, in provinces, career guidance has been given to different high schools, I would ask that let the high schools that are prioritized be the most rural ones, because really the most rural ones, we are suffering. If really kuno kalwa ngeria, at least those that are in urban areas, they are wiser. I thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with both the two colleagues who spoke before me. This committee and the CBE, in a way, sit at the top of the feeding chain. And we're dealing with issues. There's not enough qualified students with the right academic qualifications to qualify as engineers, architects, quantity surveyors, and all these highly skilled professions, which we desperately need in this country. But if the problem goes back right when students or children make subject choices at school, at high school, if there's simply not enough people matriculating, students matriculating with science and maths as their subjects, then we're not going to have enough students to qualify as engineers, as architects, and all the others. So the problem goes right back, and even to school and to preschool level even, where you have to start preparing children for that. Now, that falls way outside of the mandate of this committee, and I also believe also of the CBE, but the problem goes back a long way. But then I want to address another issue where maybe the CBE can actually assist. These so-called colleges who really just fly by night and they exploit poor people, those are a big problem. And when people then believe, parents believe that their children have not qualified, and they haven't really qualified, their qualification is meaningless. That's a sin. That's really a sin against the generations that are being trained. And what can be done about those? And maybe that also falls outside of the mandate of this committee and the CBE. Maybe it's higher education. But that is also a huge problem and leading to this, when we have the professional people, and especially in the technical and the skills professions, who are aging and moving out of the system, and they're not sufficiently new people, young people coming in. That's a big problem. But what are we doing to address those fly-by-nights who really exploit poor people?
Are we done, Honourable Member? Good question. Are there still outstanding issues to respond to?
No.
Okay. Honourable Members, I think there are three things that we need to agree on. One, we'll have to ask the minister to look into the CBE Act. Number two is to ask the minister to bring forward the CBE Indaba. Number three is to... No, I keep repeating the same. Number three is the issue of the MO2 MOUs to be signed before the end of June. Are there any additions? And also check on the Sixth Council Act to see what's in that in those acts. Because they do have equal power, the Sixth Council and the CBE. So the CBE cannot have enforcement powers over the Sixth Council. We're not saying they must go and control them, but their main task is to regulate. We are saying they must, the department must look into that, and this is urgent. Before the end of today, we have written a letter to the department, to the minister, specifically to the minister need to look into that, and also we need to assist the minister into looking into that. The X to say where are the loopholes for guidance and for assistance of your consult. Otherwise, honourable members, there are two announcements from our corner. I think we have come to the end of our meeting, but I can make them announcements. The meeting of the 8th of May has been cancelled because of the program, the parliamentary program. We have got EPCs, and we can't have the meeting. The meeting was to deal with the sister departments that are not paying rent to public work. It's postponed. On the 9th, from 10 to 12, we are expected to meet the delegation from Kenya at the portfolio committee. The venue will be communicated to you, honorable members. Let us all be there. Go and share our experience with them. And tomorrow, we are coming here to come and adopt the report. Before, do you have copies of the? There are copies of the report here. We cannot deal with our budget before adopting this report. So all of us tomorrow must be ready for the adoption of this report before meeting the department, because we are going to meet the department to look into their budget and give them a go-ahead. Otherwise, there won't be a budget debate next week if you don't deal with it. Thank you very much. And CBE, thank you very much for your presentation. But you also need to assist us in making sure that the problems that are there are solved. Next time, don't come with major problems. Make sure that. And also, bear with me, CEO. I know that you are new, you are like Honorable Dreyer, but at least you tried your best.